Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, monthly market update episode for this current month of November 2017. I am here with our resident expert, economist, and wealth advisor, Paul Sloat, founder of Green Drake Advisors based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. On today's monthly market update episode, Paul fills us in on the economic forces at work in the national and global economy and what those forces are expected to do to the local real estate investment markets in the short and long term. Once again, we do have good news on the horizon for single-family house investors and some clouds on the horizon for the multifamily housing investors and some other potential hot pockets not yet mentioned on our show or anywhere I've paid attention in another segment of the real estate market. But I'll let Paul tell you about that. So let's get right to it, shall we? All right. Welcome to the show, Mr. Paul Sloat. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you, Dan. How are you today?
You know, keeping busy out here. You know, we're excited, at least at Diamond Equity. We have the Atlanta and the Chicago markets are both just completely on fire. I mean, it's definitely an internal thing, Paul. It's not like, I mean, Atlanta's a hot market. Philadelphia's a hot market. Chicago is like a Midwest, you know, somewhat more stable and not so super hot market. So it's internal that we're seeing some growth in those markets, and I'm happy to report that to the listeners and, you know, to my team.
Now,
my team
is in the housing area, correct?
Absolutely. Single family houses. We specialize in the renovation product. So like what's a good fit for us, Paul, is something that needs a renovation. It's going to be determined value wise on the retail side, which we always talk about on our episodes here. You know, the heat in the market is determined by the retail values once they're completed. But we specialize in the distressed conditionally properties.
Right. And that's really where the opportunity lies, especially today. And I think you're in the right area, Dan, because as you know, I've been positive on this whole single family housing area. And we've got some data today that I'm going to review that's going to only reinforce that.
All right. Well, I'll let you take it away.
All right. Well, for those listeners should know that today is Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. So, you know, when we're recording the program. Today, I'm going to talk about a couple of things. Why don't we talk about tax reform for a minute? It's likely that changes to the mortgage interest deduction will disappear as the bill moves through Congress and the reconciliation process. There's been a huge outcry against that. And there are a number of Republican congressmen and senators in nominally red states or in suburban markets that would find their careers in jeopardy if they voted to effectively limit or eliminate the mortgage interest deduction. So we don't see that going away anytime soon for those of you in the housing area. Let's talk a little bit about some statistics. As Dan and I were talking about, we have been positive on single-family housing and less positive on multifamily housing. And the reason for that is because our analysis indicated the millennials were moving into their prime home buying years. And that is what the data has been supporting and will continue to support for the next few years. And sometime in the 2020s, early 2020s, around 2021, 2022, these same millennials will be ready to buy their move-up houses. So that's about 5 years away for those of you who are going to be long-term investors in the housing market. But let me give you some data, and this is data that was put out by the government on household formation. And what was not surprising was the number of households formed, but what the most important numbers were how the composition of where those households are going is showing through the data. So what the latest household data show, and this is year over year, is that the number of households that were owners of housing increased 755,000 year over year. In other words, there were 755,000 new homeowners net of any deaths of the baby boomers. And for those in the multifamily area, there was a decrease of 348,000 in the number of renters. This 1 million shift in households supports what we have been saying for a number of years, that the apartment rental market is going to get more and more difficult. At the same time, the single family market is going to continue to improve because you have a demographic wave. And we've seen this happening in Philadelphia. We've seen this happening in Atlanta. We've seen this happening in cities in Texas. We see this happening generally around the country as millennials age into their prime home buying years and have children and get married and do all the things that their parents did. They may do it a little bit differently. They may want the houses to be all fixed up, unlike those of us who expected when they bought a house that it would be a fixer-upper. I remember my first house and all the things that I fixer-upped when I bought my first house. The millennials today don't have many of the skills that the former generation had because we had classes such as shop in school. There is no shop in school anymore. So we learn basic carpentry, we learn basic electrical, we learn basic plumbing in school. Those things are not taught today. So this is just something that should be kept in mind. So we expect those of you who are buying and fixing up homes to be in a good position for the next number of years. Now, let's talk about what's going on in multifamily. Multifamily deliveries should peak sometime in the first half of 2018. As a result, you should see the worst supply additions then. But here is the big but. The supply additions are coming at the same time as the data show. The number of renters is declining, so any increase in supply with a declining demand is going to result in lower utilization. So we expect over time there to be more and more pressure on rents and more vacancies. Now, for those of you in the rental market, you also have to realize that your taxes are going to go up and your costs are headed up, and especially on the labor side. For the first time since 1999, real median income is now up at a new level. This is really important, and we think this is going to continue, and we think labor costs are going to go up for the next 5 to 10 years, and labor is going to reclaim a larger share of GDP. So in managing your properties, you need to be aware that labor is going to be a growing expense over time. So that is something that all of you who own rental units should be aware of. Now, let's shift gears a little bit, and let's talk about where, outside of single-family housing, there might be an opportunity to do some real estate investing. One area that has caught our eye over the last couple of years and is beginning to become more interesting is those commercial properties that are located in areas with significant defense presence. For the last 7 years, the amount of money spent on the military has gone down, and in real terms, we are spending today 40% less than we spent in 2009. This is beginning to reverse, and we're beginning to spend more money, and Congress is allocating significantly more money. So properties, whether it's warehouse properties, whether it's office properties located near defense installations or heavy concentrations of defense contractors, should do well. And the other thing we should be aware of when we think about office properties is that office supply growth has been fairly in check over the last 5 years. Office supply has grown less than 0.7% nationally. Now, of course, this has varied from market to market, so you really have to be careful of which markets you're looking at. because some are growing at pretty rapid rates. So that is just one thing to keep in mind, but for the markets where you're not getting supply growth, office could be quite interesting. And while we expect a recession sometime in the next few years as the Federal Reserve raises rates and pulls money out of the economy, this is one area that could do okay in the recession due to the limited supply additions and could benefit significantly from a defense buildup over the next few years. A reason for this defense buildup will be the strategic need for the U.S. to spend money here after having allowed things to run down, the need to replace ships, the need to build a missile defense for countries like North Korea, and the need to update our infrastructure to protect the country. So we see multiple avenues of spending in the defense area, and these should benefit specifically office and warehouse properties and industrial properties that are near defense manufacturing or near defense companies that are going to be growing over the next few years and going to be hiring more consultants and more outside contractors to do business with them. So while we're negative on certain aspects of real estate, such as multifamily, such as self-storage, we are positive selectively on certain areas such as office. And we have been positive on warehouse for some time, especially as for every $1 billion in incremental spend on the internet, we need about 150,000 of incremental space in warehouses. So that's just another little statistic to shop away in your mind, that, you know, warehouse will continue to do well as we shift more and more goods to being sold over the internet. And let me just talk about a couple of other things. What does Trump's trade view mean for real estate here in the United States? What it means is that we're going to have more stuff manufactured here. So industrial real estate should be an opportunity, especially in a recession where you can likely get some properties at a pretty good price, because as we produce more stuff here, there's going to be more demand for industrial space here. And by the way, the other thing we should keep in mind with having more stuff produced here, it's likely going to increase productivity growth and increase long-term economic growth. If we're in a faster economic growth, we have more inflation typically. And in fact, we had a member of the Federal Reserve talking about targeting higher levels of inflation than have been targeted before. In other words, the Federal Reserve is beginning to prepare the groundwork for allowing higher inflation so we can have higher growth. The two are positively correlated. So if we were to return to the 3 to 3.5% long-term growth rate that we've had over the long term, what we can expect is that inflation would move from, let's say, 1.5 to 2% to 2.5 to 3% with peaks somewhere in the 4 to 5% range. And by the way, that would mean interest rates would go higher over the long term, especially on the long end. And cap rates on properties would go up over the long term. So for those of you who are buying and holding properties, you have to keep in mind that the multiple you'll get on your cash flow in the future is going to be lower than the multiple you get today. And a simple example of this would be, I buy a property, I hold it for a decade. Let's say my NOI, my cash flow, goes up 4% per year for the next decade. We'll assume there's no recessions, which we all know is ridiculous. But let's just assume we go up 4% a year. The multiples on cash flows now are fairly high. Cap rates are a little over 6%, which means I'm getting paid 16 to 16 and a half times my cash flow. Let's suppose that the cap rates go up to, let's say, just 8%. That means I'd only get paid 12 and a half times my cash flow, or 12 times my cash flow. And at 12 times my cash flow, what it turns out is that the value of my property over a decade doesn't go up very much. In fact, it goes up about 0.5% a year, even though my cash flow is going up 4% a year, because the multiple of that cash flow has gone down. And the other thing we need to think about, if inflation, let's say, averages 3.2%, which, by the way, is its 100-year average since the Federal Reserve was created, and we'll talk about that in a minute, that means that the real value of my investment has actually dropped 2.5% or more per year for the past decade in 10 years. So we need to think about what it means to be a long-term holder of real estate, what it means in real terms, and how rising rates and rising inflation are going to impact the way we invest in properties. So if we can't depend on valuation to bail us out, what we need to do as real estate investors is to look at a property and our ability to upgrade it and turn it into a higher and better use. So whether that means taking a C property and turning it into a B property, or taking a used mall somewhere where the mall has no economics and turning it into a multi-use type of development, we need to think about the value-add component, because we're not going to be making money other ways. And people say, well, what happens if interest rates don't go up? Well, if interest rates don't go up, that means the economy is in deep trouble. So that means that your cash flow is not going to grow, and in fact, your cash flow might go down. So when we look at this whole thing, we say, think about what you're doing in real estate carefully. Ensure you're creating real value in the property and not depending on the market valuation to bail you out. The only exception would be if we have a recession, which we would expect in the next few years, and you have some opportunity to buy real distressed properties because people got overleveraged and you can buy them at a discount from the bank. Well, then you may have a real opportunity to buy those properties and make out on the valuation. But outside of those opportunities, you're really going to have to focus on creating value in the investment into the property. And that's all I have to say for today, Dan. Any questions?
I have one written down here, Paul. You talked about the year-over-year household formation numbers. And
right.
755,000 new homeowners versus 340,000 or so decrease in the multifamily. Can you provide a context as to like how long that net increase could maybe go on? Are we talking about a number of 3 million, 5 million, or is it like an overbuilding of the single family and that demand of the additional 755,000? When would that demand dry up? I'm hoping maybe we could get some context just to kind of define that number, makes
so
more sense for us.
So the easiest way to look at this is to take a look demographically at the millennial. Okay, the millennials are a generation just like the baby boomers. So what you can think of is that this is going to go on for probably at least the next 5 years, and maybe the next 8 to 10 years, as the millennials fully age into their home buying years. You're at the tail end of the millennials are entering the workforce right now. They are in their early 20s, so in 10 years they will be buying homes. So I would think this is going to go on for at least the next 5 years and probably for 8 to 10 years. And by the way, when we looked at the demographics, we know for multifamily, there is going to be zero growth in the prime rental group from 2020 to 2025. So we could probably say from now to 2025, which is, what, 8 years away, this sort of skewness is going to go on where you're going to get net household formation moving into housing, single family, and net decrease, or at least no increase, in apartment demand.
Do you know offhand the statistic of what the number of millennials, that generation, how big is that generation by any chance?
Not off the top of my head, but I will tell you that the millennial generation significantly exceeds the baby boomer generation. And as a result, they're going to have as large, if not a larger, impact on the economy.
Paul, for any listeners that may want to get in touch with you, do you want to give a quick soundbite of what you do and how they might reach out?
Sure. You can reach us on our website or by calling our office. Our website is www.greendrakeadvisors.com, and our office number is 610-687-7766. What we do, we are in the wealth management business. We advise our clients on investments not only in the public markets but on private investments as well. We also are focused on making sure that they have the future they want for their college payments and for their retirement needs and for anything else they might want to do, such as belonging to the golf club locally or owning a boat or anything else or spending more time traveling the world. So that's basically what we do in a nutshell, Dan.
All right. Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks again for coming on the show. It's been a very educational episode.
Okay. Take care, Dan, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Monthly Market Update episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification when the next REI Diamond Show episode is released? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Do you have deals for sale? Go to www.reidiamonds.com and send them over. I am buying houses and other profitable real estate deals in the following markets: Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Chicago, the Atlanta, Georgia region, and the Tampa Bay and Miami markets in Florida. You can also find deals that I might have for sale in those areas, along with our full catalog of past REI Diamond Show episodes. There is tons of cash-generating opportunity in the form of real estate and knowledge, which you can find there. Thank you again for being a loyal listener of the show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.